Well, as some of you may have noticed, a lot of the hymns today have kind of a similar theme, especially kind of with the beginning of them, of the phrase, O come. O come, all ye faithful. O come, Emmanuel. O come, water. Thank you. And basically, it's kind of a call for someone to approach something like some place like come to Bethlehem, or a request for someone to come to us, such as we are requesting the return of Christ Emmanuel to return back to earth to us. And this is appropriate for the time of Advent, because we are looking both back towards the time of the Nativity, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but we are also looking forward to his triumphal return in his second coming. We see that as we have recalled things of the past, because we are recalling them time and time again, certain rituals and ceremonies, traditions have come forth. And we see those in the church, we see them in families, we even see them in the community, such as with the lighting of the Santa Claus. But then again, for the Christians, we also have not just this remembrance and this time of giving that a lot of the non-Christian cultures have, we are also looking forward to his triumphal return. Now, during this time, this is a period of time of waiting and anticipation. It's kind of similar to Lent in that at that time, we were making time in preparation for Jesus' time of passion, his time on the cross. We use those 40 days of Lent as a time of sacrifice, giving up something that we love, because we know this was going to be a time of sacrifice on the side of Jesus. In this case, because of it being Advent, is kind of the flip in that it is a time of rejoicing. It is a time of giving. And rather than going through the Lent period of giving something up, we instead have the lighting of the Advent wreath, and we also do have the Advent calendar as a way of preparing our minds and souls for this time of reflection for Christ coming and his eventual return. And since most people see this time of year as being a celebration of Jesus' birth, I thought I'd ask a question. When was Jesus born? Okay, I heard in the summer. Okay, the biblical scholars do not believe that Jesus was born December 25th. Yeah, as far as we know, there's no evidence to support that. But the church, for various reasons that we could go into, chose this time as the time of that nativity. The scholars are open as to when it could have been. The Bible doesn't say. It is very open to interpretation. But one of the things that we do know of is that it's very clear that the shepherds were still in the fields with their flocks. If it would have been December, they wouldn't have been out there. It'd have been too cold. So the best they can say is summer or possibly late September, October. Okay. We don't know exactly when he was born. But that does not negate the fact that he was born. How many of you know when your great-great-grandfather on your mother's side was born? Probably not many of you, unless you are big into ancestry, and even then you might not know it off the top of your head. But that doesn't negate the fact that there was someone born, they lived long enough to have a child, who had a child, who had a child, and so on until you. So just because we don't know the specifics of the dates of these events doesn't mean they didn't happen. Now, we know that Jesus was born, God came to the earth through a virgin, he lived among us, And most of his life among us was not recorded. We don't have the details on most of his years of life. But he did found a new understanding of religion, of understanding the scriptures that had gone before, of understanding God, and we call that Christianity. He was crucified, dead, was buried, come back to life. All of these facts, even though we don't know the dates that they happened, doesn't change the fact that they actually happened. By that same hope that we have and knowledge of the past, we can look forward to his return. Just because we don't know exactly when that is going to be does not negate the fact that Jesus will be returning. That's one of the things that this passage in Matthew made very clear, that no one knows when Jesus will return except for the Father. Jesus himself didn't even claim to know that. Now, throughout history, we've seen different times when people have said, oh, he'll be coming. This is the date. During the first 1,000 years, the millennial, and then even to some extent not too long ago with Y2K, we had this anticipation of Jesus' return. Throughout history, there have been a number of leaders that started cults saying, oh, this is going to be the day. And people in preparation sold everything because Jesus would be back. And needless to say, they wound up disappointed and broke because Jesus did not come in the clouds on the day they anticipated. So during this time of Advent, we don't want to lose the hope. We've got the past as proof of this hope that we are in expectation. So even though we are uncertain as to when it will happen, we know it's going to happen. So we need to be prepared. Now, if I'd have gone on a little bit further with the passage in Matthew, we'd have had a little bit more of an example of that, but I went with the lectionary, and it cut it off there, that's fine. But we do have a graphic, if we're ready here. Sorry, I kind of went off script here. Okay. I don't know how many of you may have heard that before, but it's one of those things that I think reflects our human nature. So it kind of reminds me also of a time at work. Where I work is a call center, and we had a period of time where we knew that any call that we took could be monitored by anyone in the organization, including the president. Now, we never knew when they were going to be monitoring, but their goal was to catch us doing something right. Until we got the email response back, we didn't know that we had been audited. Oh yeah, it happens. Now we know on a regular day by day, any call we take can be monitored, but we're aware of it, and it usually would be our coach or another local coach. It wouldn't be one of the higher ups. So knowing that we're going to be observed puts a little extra stress on you. Even if you know your job and you know how to do it and you know you're doing it right, there's a little extra stress in making sure you're doing what you should be doing. And that's one of the things that we sometimes need to be reminded of. We know that Jesus will be coming, and we do hope that we will be found doing the right thing when he does return. Okay. Now, as we look at this time of Advent, we are kind of, Advent means the arrival of a notable person or event. We already know that the person is Jesus, and we know the event is his return. But I also want to take a look at kind of a related word to Advent, and that is adventure. And that is, the dictionary defines adventure as an exciting or very unusual experience, participation in exciting undertakings or enterprises, or a bold, usually risky undertaking, a hazardous action of uncertain outcome. Okay. Well, we know that Jesus' return is going to be exciting. It's going to be unlike anything the world has ever experienced before. Now, as for the uncertainty, well, we do know the eventual outcome, but the specifics are still uncertain. For instance, according to everything Jesus has said, we may be surprised as to who's sent to his left and who is sent to his right side. So, we've got this wonderful idea of adventure, but it's still kind of out there and a little hard to grasp. So I decided this Sunday to bring it down a little bit to earth to maybe an adventure that more of us could relate to. As many of you know, I had an adventure of a lifetime about 2 months ago. And that's why I'm wearing what I wore then. So rather than wearing the suit and tie, which I could have done, I decided, you know, hey, if Pastor Bibby could wear a fisherman outfit, I could wear the clothes that I wore to the Vatican and the Notre Dame de Paris. So, now, I don't know how you pack. Normally, if I'm packing, I like to take things with me because I never know what I'll need. Oop, I might spill something and I'll need another shirt. Or, oop, I might need another pair of pants. Or, well, if we're going to go out and do this, I want to dress it for this. So even going to Indy for a weekend, I might have a big suitcase bigger than this. Instead, this is what I took with me. These two things. Had them filled up, but I was traveling light. Yes, you were one of the people recommending that I travel light. Okay. So, that's part of the reason why the props. Okay, so anyway, let me go back a moment here. So, with this trip that I had, as I said, I was not expecting it. Never thought I would ever be able to do this in my life, but sure enough, I was able to do it. Basically, this was the result of a gift from my brother. Not for anything that I had done. I hadn't done anything to deserve it. But it was a matter of who he is and who I am, that it was a gift freely given. And I think that some of you will also understand there are many gifts that we get that are freely given. Okay. Now, basically what happened is I was talking with my brother about some time I had off from work. And so far, he and I had no real luck in being able to spend any time vacationing with each other. So this time he put out the idea of, where would I like to go? And let me travel on my own, because they were going to be busy. He essentially said, where would you like to go? And I'll pay this much for it. And left it into my hands. So this was going to be my first time traveling overseas, my first time outside of the country since 9/11. And I'd only been up to Canada, and no offense to Dorothy if she was here or our neighbors to the north, but that's not very much different from traveling to the U.S. So, I had to research and prepare. I checked with those who were more expert and who had traveled there before. My brother and his wife, Karen, were my primary sources, but I also used a tour company. And I did internet research, looked at several websites, and got the reviews. Fortunately, I already had my passport. Once I got the dates of the tour, I had to check on the availability of other things I wanted to do. There were certain things that were only available at a specific time, so I had to work my schedule around those things I wanted to do. I had to decide what was my better priority. I was told repeatedly, pack light. Basically, I was told, you don't need to take as many things as you think you do. I was going to be gone for 22 days. But they said, guess what? The hotels have sinks. You can wash your clothes in the sink and hang them up to dry. And it's the drying part that is really tests your patience. Hair dryers help. But anyway, I was also told, okay, every place that I'm going to be traveling has got modern plumbing, so I don't have to worry about not being able to drink the water. Yes, knowing a few phrases of the language would be helpful, but English is the most common tongue, so you shouldn't have any real problem. Yes, I would have jet lag and plan for it, but being in the sun helps. Okay. I was told don't use credit cards, carry cash. It's the exact opposite of what we think with the U.S. But with just so many opportunities for identity theft, fact that they would use it outside of my site where they could copy information down, exchange rate charges, et cetera, go with the cash. They said, carry a fake wallet with you with no more than about $50 worth of cash on it, so that way you can make your small purchases. And if it's pickpocketed, you're not out as much. Keep your real valuables, your passport, your hotel itinerary, in your money belt, which I am wearing. So, once I was part of the Rick Steves tour, which is the tour group I got with, they introduced a thing called the buddy system, where they made sure that you were matched up with someone who was not traveling with you. So when they got ready to go to the next place, we could do a buddy check and make sure everybody was there. If someone was missing, we knew about it and could start looking for them before we moved on 100 miles down the road to our next location. Also, they said a smile and a few attempts to speak the language will go a long way in dealing with the locals. Have a compass. Have a map. Know you will get lost. And be ready to deal with it. Relax. Also, be aware of your surroundings. And take backups of what you can't do without. Okay, so that's kind of the preliminary. With regards to my trip, basically I left from O'Hare, flew to Dublin, visited a friend there who lives in Chicago who used to drive a taxi, and I was able to leave my car with him, and through his connections I get a discounted ride to O'Hare. In Dublin, I had a 2-hour layover and ran into my first surprise. I got there and there was no gate assigned for my flight to Cardiff. I had an hour wait before they would figure out which gate it would be going to. I got a chance to go and enjoy a breakfast. Found out that it was what they later call a traditional English breakfast, even though I was in Ireland. I stumbled over the fact that they had used the euro there and not the British pound. I found that my lack of knowledge of geography and economics was in fact. Okay. From Dublin, I took a short flight to Cardiff, and I really didn't get to see much of Ireland other than the airport and what I could see out of the airplane window. Cardiff is in Wales, part of the UK. What I hadn't thought about is that, yes, English is spoken there, but so is Welsh. It is a completely bilingual country. All of the signs are in both English and Welsh. So this is my first time to really start rethinking and realizing I am really in a different part of the world. But the good thing was it was in a country that allowed me this easy adaptation. Okay. I have to admit, though, that the speedy bus ride from the airport to downtown Cardiff on a bus that was flying on the left-hand side of the turn and going right through those turnabouts was also an awakening experience. Very few stop signs there. Now, because I had watched a bit of British TV, especially Doctor Who and Torchwood, I had an idea of a few things to expect. Even so, the experience was incredible. I could go on and on about this, but I digress a little bit. So, let me just keep go on with my itinerary here. After a few days in Cardiff, I took a train to London. Arriving in Paddington Station, I was completely turned around and with no idea where I needed to go. It took a bit of asking questions and even finding out where to ask the questions was a challenge. Finally, I was able to get the guidance I needed to go, oh, you need to go here for the information. Oh, here's you need. Oh, you see these colored lines on the floor? Follow the blue one. No, the medium blue one, not the dark one. There were about 10 of them down there. Follow that, and it would take me to the area I needed to go. Great guide system if you know what to look for. Okay. Now, I spent several days in London, I was able to take a trip out to the plains of Salisbury to visit Stonehenge. On the way back, we stopped at a 14th century village of Lecoq, also to Bath, which was named after a Roman bath that had been established on a Celtic temple site. From London, I took the Eurostar under the English Channel to Paris. My first afternoon in Paris, I was able to join the tour group. We visited different sites in Paris, the Burgundy wine countryside, including Bjorn, into Switzerland and the Alps, up through Austria into Germany to Munich, and then on the way back down through Italy, stopping at Venice, the Tuscany countryside, which includes Florence, and into Rome. And then from Rome, I caught a flight back into Dublin and then back to O'Hare. So even though I had planned well, of course, things tripped me up. My train ride from London to Paris got out of the tunnel and hit a wild boar. We don't even have those in the U.S. that I'm aware of. But the damage was sufficient enough that they had to stop the train and do an inspection. And the train had to reduce speed. We got into the edge of Paris, and they had to stop again to double check the thing again. Unexpected delays. Okay. Well, I was foolish in that I had learned, the water's safe to drink, so I didn't take all the meds that I should have. I got diarrhea when I was in Munich. Not pleasant. And I found out that even though there were plenty of pharmacies about, they're not open on Sunday. Not in Munich. Fortunately, I was able to get by limpingly with the help of my fellow tour group people. The women there were good to mother me, and they would often have pills to help me out until I could actually get to a real pharmacy. Also, because I had packed light, I didn't bring a coat. I had a rain jacket, which was very, very helpful in the UK. Believe me, every day we had at least drizzles. But even though layers keep you warm, it was getting cold in Munich. Fortunately, my tour group leader had eagle eyes. And she found this really nice wool sweater, 15 euros. That's not bad at all, because that's real close to like $15. Nice and warm, that got me by. So, what does all of this have to do with Advent, you might say? Okay, basically, one of my favorite verses of the Bible is also found a little earlier in Matthew. It is from chapter 10, verse 16. And this is when Jesus is sending his disciples out. He gives them instructions and says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep among wolves. Therefore be as cunning as serpents and as innocent as doves." Now, if anything, for the imagery and the contrast, I love that verse. But look at what he's saying. The world is dangerous. You're out there as sheep amidst wolves. There is danger all around you. There's risk. But we're not supposed to stay safe in our pens. Jesus is sending them out into that. Now, he's also saying, don't be stupid. He is sending us out as to be as cunning as serpents. If you go back to Genesis, where we first had the serpent described, he is described as being the most subtle of creatures. That means that they are able to use mental acuteness, discernment, cunning, crafty, wily. Use your smarts. But don't use them for nefarious purposes, because he also says, be innocent as doves. So God gave us a brain to use. He also, Jesus in Matthew said earlier, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. So yes, we trust in God, we trust in his protection, but that doesn't mean we don't use the resources that he has provided for us. So, let me kind of contrast how my preparation for Europe can help us to prepare for Christ's return. I had no idea what to expect in Europe, so I looked to the experts. We have no idea exactly what Christ's return is going to be like, but we have the Bible. Now, there are many passages in the Old and the New Testament to give us images and suggestions to help us prepare, but we still don't know what it's really going to be like until we're there. One of the things that I had read about was Trafalgar Square in London being a big neon busy shopping area. Okay, well, as I walked up to it, I found a very large fountain, a bust on a tall column, and the British National Gallery. And I thought, okay. And then I walked behind the gallery. That's where it was. Busy, busy people, crowds, traffic, neon lights, busy shops, all sorts, food, plays, at least two theaters. I didn't realize it until I got there what the reality was. Just like with the Bible, we get different viewpoints on what the second coming is going to be like, depending on where you're looking at from. Until we actually experience that reality, we don't know what it's really going to be like. All we can do is prepare. Now, I had been given instructions on how to prepare for the journey, and I did my research. So we've got the Bible. We have daily prayers and meditation. We have the commentaries, Bible studies, Bible guides. And all of this can also help us prepare for God's and Jesus' eventual return. Now, I had chosen what I really wanted to do and where to go and what to experience. And I needed to make allowances for that. In the same way, we need to choose what we value in life, whether it is time with church, time with family, volunteer work, our jobs. We need to choose where our focus is going to be because there's only so many hours in a day. Now, as I mentioned before about the packing light, we need to decide what's important and hold fast to it. Sometimes you have to make a quick decision where you can only have so much time to save something, whether it's from persecution, a fire, natural disaster. And so you only have a moment to grab things. So we need to realize what's truly valuable to you. But then keep in mind that which is really, truly valuable, you carry with you when you go. Kind of related to that, as I've mentioned elsewhere, I'm a bit of a pack rat. I came to it through both mom and dad. But one thing I learned from my travels is that if you leave something behind, you cannot go back to get it. It's gone. And while this is a bit materialistic seeing of it, that's also something we need to keep in mind. When things are gone, they're gone. We can treasure them while we have them, but we need to let go when we need to. And some things we do need to keep in mind we can never lose, such as God's love for us. Okay. Now, in dealing with the other cultures and languages, and that I could go on for a real long time, but as Christians, we've been changed. We've been born again. So our ways are not, or at least shouldn't be, like the rest of the world. Since we have accepted Christ into our lives and made him Lord of our lives, our priorities are different. We have a different way of looking at life. We even use different language. So we speak a language that is different from the world, even though we are still in the world. But we're supposed to be examples, a city on a hill. So we need to choose how we come across, because when the church loses its focus and starts making decisions based off of worldly matters instead of godly, we lose our voice of authority and we're no longer different from the world. Prayer is absolutely essential. I have no idea how many times I reached out to God in prayer. Oftentimes in praise and thanksgiving, but several times I fell back on my old standby. Dear Lord God, help me. And because there would be times I would be lost or not know what where to go or what to do, and he was always with me. I was never frightened on my tour. There were times I was apprehensive, but never frightened. And I thank God for that. And of course, we all know how prayer is essential in our daily lives. Okay. Now, as I've mentioned before, no matter how well I planned, I didn't plan well enough. I forgot the meds, didn't pack a heavy jacket. In life, we can't plan for everything, no matter how much we try. Hindsight always makes things a lot clearer. And we realize, well, of course I should have expected that. Or we choose something and we chose, oh, that probably won't happen, and didn't plan for it. So related to that kind of idea is that we need to rely on others. The meds, being able to find the sweater. This buddy system idea is good. I benefited greatly from the others in my tour group and from my tour group leader with her wisdom, knowledge, and sense of humor. Also from the kindness of strangers who would help me out by offering directions or how to deal with situations. We benefit here from the different small groups, whether it's the men's Bible study, the ladies' Bible study, or the larger church group. We benefit from others. We need to rely on each other to help each other out, build each other up, as well as hold each other accountable when we start falling away. We're all part of God's family, and no one of us can do it on our own. Now, a little bit more of my experience as I get ready to wrap this up here. I had the opportunity to visit ancient Stonehenge. They say that could be over 5,000 years old. I got to visit the ancient Roman baths that were 2,000 years old that had been built on Celtic temples that were older yet. I was in the great Cathedral de Notre Dame de Paris. I was able to visit the Parthenon, which had been built to host all of the Roman gods and got converted into a Catholic church. I was in a beautiful 14th century church in Munich that had been rebuilt and remodeled and rebuilt again, especially after World War II. And something I noticed in Europe that seems to be lacking in the U.S. is just the sheer weight of history. I was able to see things that are far older than our country, and in some cases older than our faith of Christianity. Now, the tourist there might take note of these, but to the local, it's a part of life. They just take that as something part of the scenery. They don't even really think about it. And one thing I really noticed in certain areas, especially in Germany, is how much the history affects the architecture, the layout of the city. It was so much clearer there because it suffered the devastation of World War II. And while it's reflected in the physical world, it also affects the economics and the people. Again, it's one of those things that the locals take for granted, but it is to the outsider or the tourist that we see that and can take that interest in those uniqueness. And I think that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind with our lives. We need to achieve a balance in how we live, because we have this experience of living with Jesus in our lives. And that's really a wonder. But how many times do we tend to take that for granted and forget about just how really special that is? Hopefully we are incorporating him in a way into our lives that we are able to live as Jesus would have us live without even really having to think about it. Just like the locals would know, okay, there's going to be a crowd of tourists by the Colosseum, so unless I want to get slowed down, I know to avoid the crowds. It's one of those things that I think we need to have that balance. And I think, you know, each of us need to work that out. So my brother had provided me with the opportunity and means to have this big event. God also provides for us. Now, my brother gave me an outline and resources, but left me to my own devices. Similarly, God has given us an opportunity and resources. But what we choose to do with the things that God has provided for us is up to us. Every snowflake is different, every set of fingerprints, every one of us is unique and different, and yet we are all loved by God. He's laid out his guidance and given his commandments. How we choose to implement them is up to us and will hopefully reflect better the glory of God. He gave us these few simple commands. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and mind. And like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you read a little further in Matthew 24, you'll see that there was a slave that hopefully was doing the right thing when Jesus returned. So hopefully, when he returns, we'll be caught doing something right. So remember, Jesus is coming. So let's be busy.